decisions by policymakers, investors, brands, and off-takers have to be taken now. And this is what I mean when I say we work with the entire ecosystem, because currently there is no consensus on a decision-making framework. What we are doing at RSB, together with all those partners that you also mentioned, we develop those solutions that help guiding the way to a biocircular economy and that can serve as such decision-making framework.
Welcome to Sustainability in the Air, the world's first podcast dedicated to sustainable aviation. I'm your host, Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simply Flying. Every Thursday, I have important conversations with top aviation executives, technology entrepreneurs, and policymakers helping aviation take climate action. Conversations that help separate the signal from the noise. Whether you are a frequent flyer or an airline executive, if you care about sustainability or simply love traveling, welcome aboard. My guest today is Elena Schmidt. Elena is the executive director at Roundtable on Sustainable Biomaterials. You may know it as RSB. RSB works on bringing sustainable feedstocks to industries like aviation that ultimately help fight climate change. They also help build standards that can be applied by industries like aviation. And they have been working with a number of airlines and the industry as a whole around the world in ensuring that these standards are not just established but also met. One of the more interesting projects Elena and I speak about in today's conversation is the Sustainable Aviation Fuels Book and Claim pilot that they launched with AirBP. RSB is a critical independent organization that sets standards and helps aviation get closer to that net zero goal. So please welcome Elena. Elena, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Can you please share with us your journey from studying environmental and political sciences to leading RSB as executive director? What does RSB do and what's your role?
Sure. So maybe starting with my journey, when I had finished my first master's degrees in political science, I felt that I had a good command over scientific methodologies and international politics. At the same time, I understood that if I want to contribute meaningfully to decarbonization and sustainable development journeys, I need to have a robust technical understanding too. And I had so many questions, from how to precisely calculate carbon emissions from energy generation, how to select agricultural practices that improve soil health, how to develop product innovations that are sustainable. And the best way to answer all those questions was to get a Master of Science in Environmental Sciences. I did this in conjunction with a job at a certification body where I was an auditor trainee. This means I went together with a very experienced lead auditor to agricultural sites as well as industrial facilities to verify whether they meet sustainability standards. And that was me walking through bioethanol facilities, pulp and paper mills, biogas plants, reading meters, detecting risk for methane leakage and so forth. And this was the first time I heard about the RSB. It was already in 2008 when I met the founding head of the secretariat, Charlotte Opel. And then in 2010, when I attended the very first auditing course that the RSB had organized for sustainability auditors. And at this course, I learned about RSB's sustainability vision, their standards, their methods, as well as this very unique multi-stakeholder nature of the organization, bringing together all these different voices when developing their sustainability approaches. I was really blown away, because how RSB approached everything was utterly different from anything I heard or learned before. It was both approaching sustainability in the complexity it deserves, but also developing smart ways for implementation. And I understood the vision, the methodologies, the standards of the RSB must be the basis for any meaningful change. So I wanted to be part of it. And the rest is history. I joined the RSB in 2015. At this time, I was already the head of the certification body where I'd started as a trainee, and I became RSB's executive director then.
Wow. Sounds like a dream come true for you here. Now, of course, RSB is starting, celebrating 10 years, its 10th anniversary. And it seems like you have had a critical impact, not just, bringing people together, but also in aviation. What's been the mission and what kind of efforts have you been focused on when it comes to travel and aviation?
Maybe explaining a little bit more about what the RSB is. The RSB is a collaborative network of thought leaders, business leaders, and practitioners across different sectors, as well as civil society and academia. We are a membership-based organization, and our members include airlines, shipping companies, industrial companies, consumer brands, as well as, and this is what makes us so unique, social NGOs, environmental NGOs, and academic think tanks. Our members share a vision to accelerate the transition to a sustainable biocircular economy. And as a very courageous group of innovators, they lead the way on a global sector transformation. At RSB, together, we convene all those members to co-create sustainability standards and solutions that are recognized as the most credible globally and that serve as a compass for innovations in alternative fuels or products to better understand whether they are sustainable or not. We implement those standards when we collaborate with our members in our programmatic work streams, for example, in our landscape level work that we can also speak about later. And we do operate a certification system for alternative fuels and materials from origin to the final product to label products for their sustainability and carbon footprint. In short, how our aviation partners often put it, RSB brings the S into SAF.
When you say you bring the S into SAF, how does that work? Are you working with airlines? Are you working with governments? Are you working with airports? How do you bring the ecosystem together?
So we work with all of those partners. So we work with airlines, we work with governments, we work with airports. And we look at it really from an ecosystem perspective. We look at it from a landscape perspective and a sector transformation perspective. We all are aware that the transformation of the key sectors, not only aviation, but also shipping, chemical supply chains, must progress urgently to mitigate climate change. Time's running and the window of opportunity for change is closing rapidly. We have to develop solutions now that help us stay within our planetary boundaries, bring those to markets and scales. Decisions by policymakers, investors, brands, and off-takers have to be taken now. And this is what I mean when I say we work with the entire ecosystem, because currently there is no consensus on a decision-making framework. What we are doing at RSB, together with all those partners that you also mentioned, we develop those solutions that help guiding the way to a biocircular economy and that can serve as such decision-making framework. So when we look at product innovations, even with best intentions, they may not always effectively work towards decarbonization or sustainable development goals. To ensure that alternative fuels or materials do have a carbon emission reduction compared to the fossil product, and to ensure that new supply chains do not create unintended consequences for people or the planet, you need a sustainability compass to guide you the way. And RSB has such compass with our sustainability standards for sustainable fuels and materials. And we include here all types of non-fossil sources, including also pathways like power to X or green hydrogen. Yet, and here's maybe what gets most interesting, RSB is not only a standard setting body. we work with the amazing breadth and size of the RSB membership. RSB has currently more than 140 members, and 53 of those are industrial end users like airlines, shipping companies, or brands. And we recently calculated together those 53 companies have a total accumulated turnover of $2.25 trillion. So it's amazing and also economic power. And we work with all those stakeholders and members to make change happen, implementing our sustainability frameworks when they develop new products and supply chains. But we also work on a landscape scale when we analyze and model sustainable feedstock potential in key emerging regions to better understand the foundations for a future economy. Based on that, we develop then or carry out techno-economic analysis to support decision-making. And we are convening stakeholders not only globally, but also in the regions that we are looking at to develop SAF roadmaps. One of our projects in Southeast Asia does exactly that.
I'm curious to hear about this project in Southeast Asia.
Yes, of course. It is a project that we launched this year, and it's supported by the Boeing company. We aim to understand better the sustainable feedstock potential and the techno-economics for different feedstock supply chains combinations that form the basis for new pathways for sustainable aviation fuel development in the region.
This is interesting. You mentioned Boeing is involved. Were there any airlines or airports involved in this or fuel producers?
Yeah. So we have several fuel producers involved in there at RSB. In addition, the way how we convene our members and stakeholders is through events, the global events, the regional events in Southeast Asia. For example, we had our Transition Leaders Forum just in May this year. But we also do this through our platforms and working groups. And as you asked for our involvement of airports, yes, we do that too. We do have our sustainable airports platform. Well, we also look at what is the role that airports can play in developing a SAF demand? What guidance can we produce for airports? So in the last years, we produced a toolbox for airports that they can use when working on SAF. And we currently also work on a new project for our Sustainable Airports platform, looking at the non-CO2 benefits. And this is also a topic that has increasing interest by those stakeholders.
This is very interesting. Stepping back a little, you said your goal is to allow transition from fossil fuels to non-fossil fuels. The challenge is aviation is so hard to decarbonize. You take a flight and you are burning fossil fuels at possibly the fastest rate possible. There is no hydrogen or electric plane that can fly in the next few years. Sustainable aviation fuel is starting to be produced, but one, it is not globally available. Second, it's very expensive. And third, there's not enough of it. That's a triple whammy for aviation, isn't it? How do you get around this compared to other industries?
Aviation is really in a very difficult situation here. And what we do from RSB side is focusing our work currently on book and claim as an opportunity for the aviation sector to overcome that. So as you said, SAF is also a critical strategy for the aviation sector to reduce their emissions and to achieve their net zero targets. And book and claim, how we see it, is a crucial tool because it helps overcoming these challenges that you just mentioned, bringing together supply and demand in a situation where we still see very, very limited locations globally with SAF availability. Also, book and claim can support sharing the price premium as it allows corporates to reduce their scope 3 emissions. At this phase, we think that book and claim can create a significant impact. And the interest of the market in our work on book and claim is immense. We had a pilot with RBP, United, and Microsoft That was the first in a row. And in the meantime, also developed a dozen of pilots involving airlines like Singapore Airlines, United, Etihad, fuel suppliers like Shell, Total, and OMV. And they're all testing different use cases for Book and Claim. Earlier this month, we also launched our Book and Claim registry, which is now available for a broader aviation sector. In our perspective, for Book and Claim to be successful, trust is really the critical piece. And once trust is lost, Book and Claim as a solution won't survive. We are therefore really proud that we have contributed with the RSB Book and Claim manual, a standardized approach to Book and Claim that is regarded as a best practice globally.
Wow. You also recently worked on a partnership with AirBP on SAF Book and Claim. Can you tell us more about this and what exactly it's meant to do?
As I said, the AirBP partnership was really the first pilot on Book and Claim. So we had at this point in time a draft version of our Book and Claim manual. And this Book and Claim manual really describes the functioning of a Book and Claim system. So what are the quality criteria for SAF, defining that it needs to be sustainably certified, that it has to come with certain information around its origin, the feedstock, the carbon emission reduction. The manual then describes how you can register a batch of SAF in the Book and Claim registry and turn it into a Book and Claim unit. So that this is the point in time where you would detach the environmental benefit from the physical product. And it then further describes how within the registry, this environmental attribute can be transferred from one trader to the next until it is then finally retired for its end use. And this very, very first pilot on Book and Claim that we did together with RBP, United, and Microsoft was really to understand these basic functions. At this time, we had a foundational Book and Claim registry that we operated more or less manually. And this now grew into the final version of the Book and Claim manual and also the digital Book and Claim registry that we just launched, and which is now available for a broader aviation market.
I'm wondering if you are familiar with what World Energy did with their SAF Book and Claim flight with Etihad for COP27 last year. How's this different? Because I think that was done directly with World Energy and Etihad, and there was no third party involved.
We also need to understand that there are several initiatives that are similar to what we are doing in the Book and Claim space, and also many, many developments in the last years. What we aim to do as RSB is to establish an ecosystem of Book and Claim initiatives. And therefore, we are currently working now on what we call our Book and Claim recognition framework. And the aim of that is to convene other Book and Claim initiatives globally that work on the same goal, that work on similar structures, and convening them on the basis of our Book and Claim manual structure. And the importance behind that is what I initially said. I think trust is the most important currency for Book and Claim that we have to build, that we have to maintain. And we see with the proliferation of different Book and Claim initiatives, there is a risk that trust might be lost because it may get confusing for industry partners, but also for consumers. So the aim of this ecosystem of Book and Claim initiatives, of working on a recognition framework, is to establish a common best practice and show also to broader net of stakeholders how different Book and Claim initiatives can work on the same basis.
This is very fascinating and interesting. Is your goal then to get more airlines to use this framework to get more corporates like Microsoft on board or to get more fuel suppliers?
It's all three. And it's important also to get back to why we are doing this. And that is why we always repeat and continue to repeat RSB's mission, accelerating the transformation to a bio-based circular economy. The aim here is to find solutions that really effectively mitigate climate change. And this is why it is so important for us in our book and claim manual to address questions around the additionality of sustainability claims, to define requirements that ensure that there really is an environmental benefit in those book and claim solutions, and to create a solution that comes with a true environmental benefit is our goal. And because of that, of course, we want to bring in more registrations into the registry. We want to onboard airlines. We want to work with more and more brands on that, because we believe that we created a solution that generates or ensures that environmental benefit is generated.
Right. You mentioned the RSB's mission is around biofuels or bio, but there's a whole movement, especially in Europe, around PTL or power to liquid or non-bio-based SAF. Do you differentiate on the type of SAF and what the source of the sustainable aviation fuel is?
What we are looking at is transitioning or nurturing a sector transformation from a fossil-based economy to bio-based and circular economy. The important point for us here is that we transition away from a fossil-based economy. And therefore, of course, we also include pathways like power to X, the green ammonia for shipping, the green hydrogen pathways. So we include them in our scope. Just recently also worked on a new standard for power to X fuels, in which we defined the requirements for those types of fuels. What are the requirements around renewable electricity? But then also, and this is our RSB again is unique and has a very holistic approach on how we see sustainability risks and ensuring sustainability for power to X. We look also into risks in the water availability and ensuring water availability also to downstream water users when those pathways are developed. At the RSB, in our sustainability standard, as I said, we do have a very holistic approach. We also look at rural development and regional development, especially in those countries where we need to focus more on development aspects. In the RSB, and operators that are certified against the RSB standard have to contribute to value creation in the region for regional stakeholders too. And this is also what is then guaranteed in the label on the product.
This is again very interesting and encouraging. Where have you seen the biggest support coming from for your initiatives? Where is the biggest glimmer of hope and support coming through for you?
I would say it is the aviation sector that has or comes with the longest standing support for the RSB. When we look at the way how a group called SAFO, the Sustainable Aviation Fuel Users Group, pledged for RSB certification way back in 2010, this was really thought leading, I would say. And when you now look into the CORSIA framework, so the framework developed by ICAO on international aviation and how to reduce emissions from international aviation, looking at the sustainability criteria that are now baked into the CORSIA framework, I've never seen in any other regulation sustainability criteria so comprehensive and holistic and appropriate, because we should not forget, now as we are moving away from fossil-derived fuel to other sources, there is also a risk of massive unintended consequences through this massive new demand for alternative feedstock. So we need really a very comprehensive way to mitigate those risks, but also having a way how we can create positive impacts through the development of these new supply chains. And I have the impression that many stakeholders in the aviation sector really from the beginning on understood very well that for this sector transformation to be a success, to effectively reach decarbonization goals, but also to maintain the trust by stakeholders, they need to build on a comprehensive sustainability certification, and thus the support for the RSB from the beginning.
How are the standards being developed by RSB different from someone like SBTi? Because we see a lot of airlines, for example, getting the independent SBTi certification for their net zero roadmaps.
I wouldn't say that RSB and SBTi are competing standards. I think we are addressing the topic from a different perspective. RSB looks at the certification of a SAF product from the origin, from the feedstock through the entire processing up to the final product, while SBTi looks more at this from an airline angle. So I think it's even complementary. And I do not want to comment on the way how SBTi or others develop sustainability standards. But in fact, the RSB standard development is one of our core activities. And it is also the activity that we are most proud of. The way we engage with our stakeholders, we make sure that our standards are practical to implement, but also widely trusted by our stakeholders. In practice, that means that we normally run several rounds of stakeholder consultation before adoption. In the very first version of the principles and criteria that was developed between 2008 and 2010, about 1,000 individuals were involved. And we are now at version 4.0, which was just adopted last week at our annual conference. And here we had, as I said, again, several rounds of stakeholder consultation. We received over 400 comments, which needed to be processed, looked at, technically analyzed. And then after that, we conducted 1 year of pilot testing. And just last week, RSB's members, the delegates from our different chambers came together. So our stakeholders from producers, the industry, social and environmental NGOs and academia, and adopted this new version on a consensus based. So in this answer, you already saw many elements or characteristics of RSB's stakeholder development, like involving stakeholders, making sure that there is a balanced representation of interest, and then taking a decision on a consensus basis. And this is why our standards are so strong and why they're leading in credibility globally.
Wow. Okay. This is very interesting. You mentioned trust. One of the critical elements of trust is relevance. And to remain relevant, you have to make sure that the standard is current. The standard is updated based on the latest developments. So how do you ensure that these standards remain robust and credible, and hence trustworthy, because this landscape is changing quite rapidly, isn't it?
It does. It does. And it is challenging. So it's a very good question. The way how we convene our members is through our working groups and member platforms. For example, we do have a member platform on Power2X, one on sustainable airports, one on sustainable biomass policies. And through these platforms, we engage our members. And this is how we can continuously have a dialogue with them and keep our finger on the pulse of what is happening. And maybe to get a little bit back to how our governance system works, because I also think that this is really unique in the landscape. We have over 140 members, and they're organized in five chambers, each representing a specific stakeholder type. So we have a chamber for producers, one for industrial end users, one for social NGOs, one for environmental NGOs, and one for academia. And they all nominate three delegates to the General Assembly. And the General Assembly in the RSB is the highest decision-making body, also on standard setting. So this approach really ensures, together with convening our stakeholders through our platforms and working groups, that there is this balanced representation of stakeholders and ensure not only highest credibility, but also practicality and, as you say, relevance, as we also include those that are thought leading in the market.
I'm glad to hear that. You mentioned that there are multiple stakeholders that you consult with and that you're constantly reviewing. Who are these stakeholders? Are these airlines? Are these fleet providers? Are these corporates? Who is the most important stakeholder for RSB?
Stakeholders include the different sectors, airlines, shipping companies, but also feedstock producers, fuel producers, stakeholders along the value chain. But then, as I also said, the civil society, the scientific stakeholders. And as you asked about who are the most important stakeholders or members, we saw in the last, especially the last year, really a steep growth in organizations that joined RSB as members. And I would say it is many stakeholders from the aviation sector. But for us, it is critical to maintain and grow not only the size of the RSB, but also look at it from a multi-stakeholder perspective. So we are focusing on growing not only in our key sector of aviation, but also make sure that we balance this from shipping and chemical supply chains, because we see how our members appreciate really also the cross-sectoral nature of our organization. Because of this cross-sectoral nature, we can convene dialogue that you would find rarely in other spaces. But then in addition, we ensure that there's also a growth in our civil society members and the academic and scientific members. Just as examples, at our last annual conference, we decided to waive all membership fees for all civil society organizations and academic institutions to strengthen also those membership chambers. We, in addition, run the RSB multi-stakeholder engagement program, which means 15% of our membership income is directed to that program and supports the participation of environmental and social NGOs at our events and our programmatic work. So as we focus many of our activities on those sectors and industrial stakeholders, we also ensure growing the participation and the representation of civil society members and academia, because we are convinced that the participation of those groups are crucial to develop solutions that really continue to build trust.
I'm glad to hear that, and thank you for sharing this. Now, RSB has completed 10 years, in which you have made a lot of progress. What's your vision for the next 10 years now? What, if you look back 10 years from now to our interview today, what would make you look back and say, oh, you know what? We did good. We achieved or exceeded our goals. What would make you really happy 10 years from now?
RSB as an organization can contribute significantly also on a landscape scale to sector transformations. And when we also look at our journey in the over the last 10 years. 10 years ago, RSB was focused pretty much on certification and pretty much on an individual operator's assessment for their ESG reporting or sustainability compliance. Now, we are moving into making change happen in collaboration with our many stakeholders on a landscape scale. And this is what we continue to develop over the next 10 years. And this is where I see the true value of the RSB as an organization, with our ability to convene all these different stakeholders, in our sector, looking at airlines, airports, fuel suppliers, but also cross-sectoral, and then also including the civil society organization, policymakers, scientific institutions. I see a role for the RSB to nurture transformations on a landscape scale. And as I said, we're working now on this project in Southeast Asia. We will broaden it in breadth and scope. And now we will also start with a similar approach in India, where I see the next critical geography to work on that scale.
I think that there's definitely a lot of potential in the emerging markets, like you're saying, so Southeast Asia, India. These are growth markets, yeah. And it's important that that aviation, especially, becomes just as sustainable in these regions, not just US and Europe, where there is a lot of government or investor pressure, for example.
Exactly.
Given your wealth of experience in sustainability, what advice would you give to young professionals who are aspiring to make an impact in this field?
Looking back, I'm still very fond of the fundamentals that I learned in the early years of my career. Being able to understand the technicalities of energy, of climate change, of land use, still supports me in understanding a rapidly changing field. And my advice would therefore be to develop a robust foundation for whatever you're setting out to do.
How do you set up a robust foundation?
Good question. And in my case, it was really going down to the field, understanding in industrial facilities, understanding on agricultural land, understanding when talking to farmers, when talking to those who run an industrial facility, understanding when reading a meter. This is how you can develop a robust foundation that then helps you speaking about sustainability on the higher levels at a brand conversation or conversation with policymakers. Having knowledge in all these levels down helps you also stay agile in your thinking. If you learn all these things just from the books, I would be concerned that you develop a quite rigid way of thinking. And what we as a global community have to develop is more understanding and more flexibility to listen to each other and to respond and come up with new solutions.
Well, get your hands dirty is the key takeaway here. What gives you the most hope for the future of sustainable aviation specifically?
There is such a momentum in the space currently. We see not only bold commitments, but we see how all of these companies really work hard to underpin commitments with action and to develop their roadmaps, their planning, their activities to really make change happen. And this gives me hope that it is not, we already moved beyond commitment. Of course, we have to, as I said, time is running, windows of opportunity is closing. And I have the impression that there is a broad understanding that this is the case. And we need together to move beyond commitment to make change happen.
Definitely. Let's close the interview on that high note. And the final part of this interview is called the rapid fire round, in which we get to know you a bit more personally, Elena. And, you know, you've done quite an inspiring work at the RSB, but, you know, we'd love to know the real Elena here. And I'll ask simple questions and tell us the first answer that comes to your mind. Simple and easy, like, what's your favorite airline?
I have many airlines that I love flying with, but I what I use most is Air Dolomiti, which takes me from Munich to Geneva. And on that route, Munich to Geneva, if you get a window seat on the left side, you have an amazing view of Mont Blanc
before landing. Oh, yes. I know exactly what you're talking about. Especially if it's a sunrise, then it's even better.
Yes, it's beautiful.
Stunning. Very nice. Munich to Geneva. Can you take the train, Munich to Geneva as well? Or is too much, too far?
It is complicated because you have to change several times, but it is also a beautiful route.
Right. Okay, fair enough. What is your favorite book?
I do have favorite books all the time. And I'm currently reading Wellness by Nathan Hill, and I love it.
Okay, I'm going to check it out. I wasn't familiar with it. Now, what's your favorite city?
La Rochelle in France, where I spent some time at university, and it's, I would say, the most beautiful city.
Where is it?
It's in France. It's the west coast of France, the Atlantic coast.
Nice. Okay. Very nice. Is the weather much different from the UK east coast?
I could say maybe the food is different, which helps sitting then in the inside.
Yes. I'm just getting used to, given my recent move to London, the British food, and let's just say it's not something to speak home about. What is your favorite movie?
I like movies with strong female characters, for instance, Hidden Figures.
Oh, yes. Really good one. It's a movie I've shortlisted to show my daughters.
Yeah, very good.
I mean, they're a little older as well. What is something you want to learn?
Patience.
Okay.
Very bad at it.
What do you do in your free time, Eleanor?
I do wood carving and playing the saxophone.
Wow. Okay. Which do you do more often, or which do you enjoy more?
I would say it is wood carving. So back to the patience piece, I think wood carving, because it just takes so much time, especially when you're working on a bigger piece of wood, to then make something out of it. Takes weeks, sometimes months. So you need to be very patient there.
Do you work on sculptures specifically, or do you work on furniture, or what do you?
I work on sculptures, and I just do it for the fun. It's no need to have something useful to come out of it.
Okay. I'm delighted that helped in the patience bit as well. What is the best advice you've received?
I would say something that I also received very early on in my career, getting along with different people's personalities, not trying to change them, but just trying to get along.
Okay, fair enough. There's a very interesting book there you might enjoy. It's called Culture Map, which focuses on working with people from around the world. And I would highly recommend that.
Yes, happy to check it out. I always love reading about these things. We had, in our last team meeting, we did a full Enneagram survey on the entire team, and had then also a session on the Enneagram. And I think the entire team really, really enjoyed it, approaching each other's personalities and better understanding how communication can work across the team, knowing all of these different types that we have.
Okay, fantastic. Last two questions. If you were on, not flying on Air Dolomiti, but perhaps flying from Munich to Sydney on an 18-hour flight, who would you love to be seated next to? And this can be someone who's, you know, alive or not alive.
A very honest answer. I would love for the seat to be empty. But to answer your question, if there needs to be one, I would select Michelle Obama. I would love to speak with her for 18 hours.
Fantastic. That's a very good answer. And finally, if we are speaking 1 year from now and we are popping champagne, what are we celebrating?
Of course, a successful year 2024. and massive investments in sustainable sector transformations that are adequate for a net zero by 2050 journey.
Fantastic. Well, on that high note, Elena, thank you very much for your time and patience and for all the great work you're doing pulling together multiple stakeholders with the RSV. It has been a pleasure speaking.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite. It's an honor.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Sustainability in the Air. Aviation is one of the hardest to decarbonize industries, yet there are multiple paths to get to net zero. Awareness is key to a green future. So please give us your support to help our sustainable aviation insights reach a wider audience. You can do this by sharing this episode on your network, on LinkedIn, Twitter, or even WhatsApp. Or perhaps you might consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to this episode. You can start a conversation with us by writing to us at podcast@simplifying.com. And for more content on sustainable aviation, please visit our website green.simplifying.com and join the movement. Sustainability in the Air is an original podcast by Simplifying. The show is produced by Juraj Toth in Slovakia. Dirk Singer is our Director of Sustainability, who leads research for each interviewee out of Greenwich, UK. Shubhadeep Pal is our supervising editor based out of Mumbai and Singapore. The articles are written by Ayushi Badola in Dehradun in India and Meera Hull in Montreal, Quebec. Creative design is led by Ligia Esteve in Montreal. Baiba Dreamen is the project director for the show based out of Valencia, Spain. Special thanks to Wendy Sim in Singapore. And I'm Shashank Nigam, the CEO of Simplifying and your host. Please feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn.